Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
I'll tell you what, when you could start the 5 o'clock hour, the money hour when it comes to radio, with one of the best people, most informed people, one of the best looking people that you could book, You're hitting a home run in the 5 o'clock hour.
Yeah.
And that's what we have right now with the great Jeff Passan.
There he
Jeff,
is.
Jeff, how are you?
Oh, hi, Michael. All those things are really nice. You missed the part, though, where I'm your number one guest. You still can't get it out of your mouth. Nah, I don't quite understand.
You know
why.
What? It vacillates because I got to tell you, Jeff, the last appearance by Steve Young, which was this Monday, he was about as great as he's ever been.
Ever.
Yeah, that's awesome. You're also not going to hear from him for another 6 months. So.
Wow.
Well, if baseball, you know, the negotiations don't go that well,
yeah,
we might have you.
From me for another.
Well said.
Point. Damn.
All right, so.
I hate it when I make points that get turned right back on me.
Without getting too much into the weeds and making people's eyes glaze over, what's going on here? I mean, how far apart are they? How much is this posturing? Can a deal happen where opening day is real?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's interesting talking with people throughout the sport, and I think the biggest frustration right now is that they all see where a deal should be. They all see the deal space being very easily reachable. I think what's preventing it at this point is that neither the league nor the union has made a significantly substantive move to get to that place. And I think there's fear on both sides that if either is the one to make that move, that the other is going to come back and essentially be inching forward as well. And, you know, they both talk about not wanting to negotiate against themselves because they feel like the other side is just completely intransigent in their positions. But the reality is, if we are going to have baseball, Michael, on March 31st this year, someone's going to need to make a move. And if we don't have baseball because both sides, and listen, I chafe at using the words both sides because it seems like I'm trying to make things equal, and I don't think things are equal here. But if neither side makes that big move, we are not going to have opening day baseball on March 31st. Simple as that.
All right, so if you were a betting man, which side do you think makes the move? Because there's going to be baseball at some point. Somebody has to make a move. It's just when. So what's the team most likely to make the move? Or the side?
Well, I think I believe if I'm just looking at everything that's on the table right now, what the union has left to give up is not gaining them a whole lot, right? Like the way someone put it to me a couple days ago, I thought it was really intelligent, that the union has the moral side here because it's the group of people. First off, the players are the product. Don't ever get that twisted. You know, as much as I love the pinstripes themselves, they're just laundry. The players are why you watch baseball. And I think the players, because of that, have the moral argument. Their salaries, as revenues have gone up throughout the sport, have gone down for 4 consecutive years. That's a real thing. That's facts. And so when teams are making more money, they're paying players less, and players say, we're the game, we want more money. The owners have a better hand in the situation. That better hand has been essentially bought through years of better negotiating. You know, we look back historically, Michael, at the labor wars from the 1970s to the mid-90s, and almost every time the players came out of that better. There's a reason that the MLBPA for a long time was regarded as the best and most effective union in the United States of America. It was because over those 25 years they made gains. But the gains that the owners have made over the last quarter century, while not quite as large as what the players did leading up to that, have been significant enough in their own rights to be the cause of this labor war that we have going on right now. And I don't use the word labor war idly, Michael. This is the second longest work stoppage already in baseball history. It's longer than the 81 strike, only behind the 94 strike, the longest lockout that we've ever seen. And we're at the point now where we are a week away. Right? That's not an exaggeration. We're like a week away from Major League Baseball's deadline of February 28th to have games being played on opening day. And they ain't close to the deal right now.
Do you get a sense that both sides are willing to sacrifice opening day?
I think that both sides are acknowledging that losing opening day is a possibility and something that they have had to grow comfortable with. Because on the player side, I think what they're standing up for, they look at it like almost a crusade. This is a very united and vigilant and radicalized group of players. And I don't use that last word, radicalized, in a pejorative sense. I use it almost like they've been awakened. You know, for a long time, the peace in this never-ending, it was seeming, labor war, the peace felt good, and everyone was winning from it. You know, salaries were going up, revenues were going up, owners were getting richer, players were getting rich, life was good, and that changed. And upon the change of that, I think suddenly it dawned on players, guys, that we don't feel like this game is being fair to us. And there are a number of people out there who say, not being fair to you. The average salary in your profession is $4 million. What the hell isn't fair about that? And you know what? Like, I get why people might think that. But you got to look beyond the number and look at what the reality is. And the reality is this. The 1,200 men who are on 40-man rosters for 30 teams at any given time are the most talented in the world at what they do. Not only are they the most talented in the world at what they do, they happen to be in a profession where very, very few people could ever come close to it. So this is a unique situation where people are not being paid for anything more than a unique talent that they have. And they feel like that talent, if the owners are getting money from it, if the owners are getting money from what they do on the field, that they should be compensated accordingly. And that radicalization of players, guys, you know, in the past, the weakness of the union has been the willingness of some members not to stick by the plan that they mapped out. At this point, I don't see any fracturing of the union going on, though there is a date coming up that could potentially change that, and that is March 31st when they're supposed to start getting paychecks. And that, you know, that on the league side, I think, is the challenge that owners are willing to put out there. You guys think you're tough? You want to play hardball? Let's see what it's like when you're not getting your large salaries and if you're quite as vigilant and as radicalized as you are before the checks are not being cashed.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKSESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Talking with Jeff Passan here on the Michael K Show. Jeff, I've been told by several people that the dynamics of this particular CBA negotiation, it's that in the past two CBAs particularly, the owners kind of took the players to the woodshed. I mean, it was unanimous, you know, knockdown victories for the owners. And that the players are trying to get it all back at this time. And for them to think they can get it all back.
I don't think that characterization is accurate. I don't think they're trying to get it all back. I think if they were trying to get it all back, they would be even more extreme in the position than they are right now. I think what they're doing, and this is a hard thing for fans, and even for me, honestly, not being a negotiator, to realize negotiation is every bit of a sport as is a pitcher standing 60 feet 6 inches from a hitter in the batter's box. And so because a side is taking a position today does not mean that that position is one from which they won't move.
Right.
They're trying to negotiate. They're trying to leverage. They're trying to use all the things at their disposal to wind up in a range that they were trying to shoot for at the beginning. So you have to take at face value the proposals that are on the table right now and acknowledge and understand they're not going to look anything like they do at the end that they do right now.
So what does the fan root for? I mean, I don't know who to root for. I just want to see baseball. Like, so I don't care who wins. I just, whoever blinks so that I can see baseball.
Yeah.
But what do you root for? What are the things that we need to see to make us feel like we're heading in the right direction?
So it's been interesting, Don, seeing the way that society has shifted in viewing this fight. And there's a little bit of polling to back this up, nothing too definitive. But back in 1994, I think there was a CBS News Ipsos poll, or New York Times, I don't know what it was. But the poll essentially said, we believe that the owners are less to blame than the players. And the percentages were 40 to 20, with I think 40 either undecided or don't care. I think that has literally flipped on its head. I think, and there was a poll that came out that had players ahead 2-1 in that regard. And I think the reason for players getting more love this time around is twofold. Number one, I think the world's opinion on billionaires has changed radically over the last 25 years, to the point now where billionaires are not seen as shining examples of captains of industry who went out there and made their money in honest ways. I think billionaires are looked at with sort of askew glances. And like, if you're the person who made $1 billion, you certainly stepped on a lot of people on the way up. And how much money does a man really need? More than that, though, I think, and this gets back to the moral perspective that the players are having. There's a collective bargaining agreement written, and that collective bargaining agreement says that a player is under reserve to a club for 6 years before he reaches free agency. The notion of a six-year reserve anymore is positively laughable. For every Fernando Tatis Jr., Pete Alonso, and Jason Hayward who comes up at the beginning of his rookie year and spends that full year, you have Chris Bryant, Vladimir Guerrero, and so many others whose debuts are managed by service time consideration. The fact that teams, and in Chris Bryant's case, he fell one day short, one day of a full year of Major League service, and had to have an entire extra year before he reached free agency accordingly, I think it's fair, it's reasonable for any fan to look at that and say that even if an arbitrator backed up Chris Bryant, or the way the Cubs handled Chris Bryant in a grievance, even if an arbitrator essentially said what clubs are doing right now by the letter of the law is okay, the spirit of it is not. And the fact that the players can point to a number of things with owners and say the spirit of what you're doing is making the game worse really increases the strength of their moral positioning, because they don't have a whole lot to give away You know, they're going to give away expanded playoffs. They're going to give away advertising on uniforms. But really, the players here are looking to get more, and they're simply not getting it at this point. And because of that, we are barreling toward an extremely bad situation. I'd say we're in a bad situation right now. If next week goes the way that the previous year has gone, guys, we are going to be in extremely bad territory, and we're going to be on the cusp of a work stoppage that's going to cancel Major League games.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, so Jeff, obviously in situations like this, there has to be a boogeyman. And it seems like the players have chosen Rob Manfred to be the boogeyman. A guy like Marcus Stroman has called the man clown on Twitter. I didn't see him taking any shots at the Cubs ownership. Isn't Rob Manfred simply doing the bidding of the owners? He's not just unilaterally making decisions on his own. He's got 30 people that he has to satisfy. So I never understand why the enmity is toward the guy who's negotiating for 30 people.
The enmity is toward Rob Manfred, Michael, for a couple of reasons. Number one, because God, does he make it easy sometimes. Whether it's the piece of metal, which he called the World Series trophy, mm-hmm. whether it's saying something like it would be disastrous to lose regular season games, which is true, but when the commissioner says that, when the commissioner imposed the lockout on the players, he's essentially owning his own potential disaster. And listen, there are things that Rob Manfred has done well in the past. There are things that Rob Manfred does well in the present. Speaking publicly, generally, has not been one of them. So he is a very easy target. But there's also this, Michael. Rob Manfred, during his last press conference himself, said, "I have not changed since 1998. And I'm not going to sit here and adjudicate this idea that Rob Manfred is completely stuck in the past. What I will say is that he has been part of the bargaining negotiations for longer than a vast, vast majority of owners in baseball right now. He's the guy who, frankly, got the owners the gains that they got over the last quarter century. So the notion that Rob Manfred is sitting here and just listening to what all the owner says and doing things at their behest. No, what Rob Manfred has done well during his time as commissioner is get the ideas of owners and go out and execute them in a way that's going to be financially beneficial toward them. And so we can sit here and listen to him say that putting your money in the stock market is a better investment than owning a Major League Baseball club. But the returns that clubs have on an annual basis belie the entire idea that and illustrate that, that's just Rob Manfred trafficking in spin, and that I would gladly trade my entire portfolio of investments for an equal stake in Major League Baseball team and feel very confident, even as baseball seemingly drives itself off of this cliff, even as the two sides go toward one another in muscle cars playing a game of chicken like it's a 1950s movie, I would still rather have an investment in a Major League Baseball team than everything else I have in the market right now.
But I will tell you this, Jeff. I'd say this was about 10 years ago. I was at a Jet game, and I was talking to Woody Johnson, the owner of the Jets, who had bought the Jets for $180 million. And, you know, the Jets are worth, now, if you sold them, they're probably a $4 billion team. And I said, well, that was some investment that you made. He looked at me, it's a terrible, he said, sports teams are a terrible investment. He said, because the bottom line is, if I put that $180 million, it would be worth more than the $4 billion, just conservatively. He said, and you can't really cash out until you sell the team. He said, so it's not a great investment.
Michael, there are a couple of things here. One, I'm going to break all kinds of FCC rules if I actually say what I think right now. But Woody Johnson is completely full of you-know-what. completely full of it. I have heard the argument that he's making is that sports franchises are like houses. Uh-oh, did you just play a drop of me?
You just accidentally had a drop plate of yourself on top
of
yourself.
Look at this bleep.
Please go on.
That's crazy.
The argument that the ownership class will make is that owning a team is like owning a house. You know, just because you could sell it on the open market, let's say you buy a house for $500,000 and it increases in value to $1.5 million. That $1 million isn't realized in cash in the moment. It's realized when you sell it. Yeah, that's true. You know what's also true? There are enormous tax advantages to owning a sports team. There are enormous social capital advantages to owning a sports team. I'm sorry, but people wouldn't invest in sports teams unless they were good investments. Like, isn't that just Occam's razor right there? Isn't that just the reality of the situation, that these people who are exorbitantly rich don't put their money in things that they don't think are going to have a good return on investment? I'm tired of hearing billionaires bitch about how they put their money in the wrong place in sports. If it's not a good investment, get the hell out. Otherwise, shut up.
Oh, we have Woody Johnson on the line. He wants to talk to you, Jeff.
Put him on. Jeff ain't scared.
Jeff's not scared.
Wow. All right. I hear you. So, well,
you kind of lit a fuse there, Michael.
I guess I did. But if that's so clear what you're saying, Jeff, then why would Rob have said it?
Here's the thing, Michael.
Why does he say stuff like that?
Because he's trying to provide cover for his dirty bosses who want to perpetuate this falsehood that what they're doing is some sort of a bad investment. Because it's a great idea to try and bring down the value of what you own when somebody else is trying to take a piece of it. The last time we saw this, Michael, was in 1994. Remember, in the early 90s, teams were talking about how they were financially ruined, how baseball was going to need to contract. All it was a gambit to try and get a salary cap in place. That's all it ever is. This fight is as old as time itself. Rich people trying to show that they're not as rich as others think they are so they can keep costs down. And the fact is, you know what? Yeah, go ahead and own your sports team without the best players in the world. Then the value of it is going to plummet. When you alienate the people who are your product, yeah, value's bound to plummet then. Otherwise, though, just save it. Ugh.
But on the flip,
that kind of stuff just bothers me so much.
But
Michael,
on the flip side, I understand. Go ahead.
Please.
No, I was just going to say, the players have to have the infrastructure of Major League Baseball. So they're in the unenviable position of being the employees and the product, as you mentioned. But they do need a place to play. And that's a huge cost to put together the infrastructure of playing somewhere else. So they both have to come together.
Michael,
they both need each other.
We're getting into a whole nother situation here, because if we want to talk about infrastructure and cost, we could talk about the terrible public investments in what are essentially private stadiums for teams. The fact that the subsidization of stadiums has gone on as long as it has, when the rich people who are profiting off of them aren't putting in many cases, a significant proportion of money at all, is one of the great schemes of our time, and we do it because we worry about losing our sports teams, and it shows how much we care about them. I lived in Cleveland, Michael. I grew up in Cleveland. Losing the Browns was one of the worst moments of my childhood. It was terrible. And how did we get a team back? Charge a bunch of people money on their taxes and take that money and give it to rich people. Like, why, Michael, is owning a sports franchise a good thing? Because you can get public money to pay for so much of what you do that it's ridiculous. And, the advantages might not be there on a day-to-day cash flow basis, but all of the ancillary things that exist for sports owners, we need to talk about them and point them out so we don't buy into this rhetoric that they try to sell us.
Wow, he is really fired up. I think he's pushing good for number one again.
Yeah.
He wants it.
Pushing? Michael, pushing? All of I'm doing is just refitting my crown.
Steve Young would beg to differ.
Steve was strong, but this is very strong, too.
He's bringing it, and I love it.
He answers the bell.
He has a hard take. There's no mushy middle. You know where passing stands.
Wow. So if you had a bet, I mean, that amazing portfolio that you previously referenced, will there be baseball on March 31st?
No.
There will not.
If I had to bet. Now, that's not 100, yes, zero. I've been, you know, I don't like assigning percentages on this thing because I hold out hope in the idea that both of these sides are simply posturing at this point for the inevitable rush toward the end. And what gives me hope about that is that, well, we've seen something like that before. Happened at the end of November between the players and the teams. The players like Corey Seager, like Marcus Semien, like Robbie Ray, like Kevin Gausman, like Max Scherzer, like all of the free agents who in a mad rush as the deadline was approaching decided to get pragmatic and sign. And the fact that players and owners, and when you're talking nine-figure deals, Michael, trust me, ownership is involved in every one of those. The fact that players and owners can find points where they believe that they have agreement on what a fair value is gives me hope that when it comes down to it, players are going to say, you know what, this sport is going to suffer and we're going to suffer as well if we don't have games on opening day. And Major League Baseball and ownership suites are going to say, you know, as much as we're in this for the long term, longer term certainly than the average player whose career is, you know, 3 years or so, even though we have hand because we're in this longer term, we recognize that the damage can be done. And I hope that there are adults in the room who can sit there and have the institutional knowledge to say that 1994 was an enormously bad thing for the sport. I was talking with Bud Selig a couple of weeks ago.
Big name and drop from passing. Keep going.
Humble brag. And please go ahead.
Actually, he was pissed off at what I wrote about Barry Bonds. So, you know what? I give Bud Selig a ton of credit. When he doesn't like something that you've written, and this goes back to his days as commissioner, he will call you, he will tell you his piece, he will listen to your response, and he wants to just after that have a good chat about baseball. He was as professional as anyone I've ever dealt with in that regard, and I always appreciate that about him. But we were talking about the strike, and he said, I'm not directly quoting him here, but it was, I'm going to paraphrase him, it was something along the lines of, the one thing I don't think people realize is how much damage it does for the game when you miss games. And I hope that the people who are involved in this negotiation, I hope Rob Manfred, Dan Halen at Major League Baseball, I hope the 30 owners led by Dick Monfort, who's head of the Labor Policy Committee, I hope that Tony Clark, Bruce Meyer, Andrew Miller, Max Scherzer, and all of the players at the Players Association understand there are consequences to missing games. You have a sport that already has a problem. And that problem is the on-field product. And you've had an opportunity this whole time during negotiations to address the fact that you have better players in 2022 than you have ever had on the field and a game that somehow is not taking those and leveraging them for more popularity with the sport. So if you're going to look past that opportunity, then you damn well better not miss games on top of it.
Great stuff, Jeff. Thank you so much. You're really, really inching up to Steve Young.
Yeah.
Yeah. Am I inching up like the proposals going back and forth on both sides? Or maybe, Michael, you need a big move. Ever thought of that?
I'm not going to blink on this. You know, Young is strong. He's strong. He's also a Hall of Famer. Also a Hall of Famer. You know, that buys him some time. Good stuff,
yeah,
as always.
To know that you love the stars, Michael.
Oh, always have. Stars. Always have. You're so right. Thank you, Jeff.
See you guys.
Bye,
that's
Jeff
Passan.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.